May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. This is an appeal from a denial of a motion to compel arbitration. I represent Easter Seals Midwest, a not-for-profit agency that provides community and living services to individuals with developmental disabilities and autism, so that these individuals are better able to learn, live, and work and participate in the community. Respondent Soares was employed by Easter Seals as a community living instructor from October 19, 2015 to January 12, 2016. When his employment ceased, he was suspended, and then because he refused to participate in an internal investigation involving accusations against him for abuse and neglect of Easter Seals clients. Respondent Soares was an at-will employee. Easter Seals employed Charity Twine as a community living supervisor. After receiving a right to sue letter from filing his charge of discrimination, Respondent Soares filed a petition in the Circuit Court of St. Charles County asserting counts of race discrimination against Easter Seals and Twine and wrongful discharge in violation of public policy against Easter Seals. Appellant Easter Seals and Twine immediately filed a motion to dismiss and compel arbitration in response to the petition. Judge House, without opinion or reasoning, denied the motion to compel in one sentence. So the subject of this appeal is whether a valid arbitration agreement exists between Respondent Soares and Easter Seals Midwest for the claims asserted by Mr. Soares. On the first day of his employment, Respondent Soares was given a handbook in which it was made clear that he was subject and going to be required to sign a binding arbitration agreement. He was also given a PowerPoint presentation and looked through a PowerPoint presentation that arbitration was going to be a condition of employment. He was also given the opportunity to read, review, and sign, and he did, in fact, sign the arbitration agreement. The arbitration agreement was signed by Easter Seals as well. As you know, the standard of review for this case is de novo. Respondent Soares and Easter Seals Midwest agreed to commit questions of arbitrability through a clear and unmistakable delegation clauses. And there are actually two clauses, so it's unlike many of the cases that have been presented to Missouri appellate courts. First, the arbitration agreement expressly provides that in the body of the arbitration agreement, that questions regarding interpretation, applicability, enforceability, and formation of the arbitration agreement must be decided by the arbitrator. This is identical to the delegation clause that was held valid by the United States Supreme Court, in which the Supreme Court said this was a clear and unmistakable manifestation of the parties to delegate the issues of arbitrability to the arbitrator. Second,
don't you have to first have a contract for the terms of that contract to be applied and interpreted?
Your Honor, what this court is has held in Pinkerton and what the United States Supreme Court has held is once you look at the if there is an agreement, offer and acceptance, you don't get into the various issues of unconscionability and weigh that. It is deferred.
But those were not employment cases, and we have a number of cases which are employment cases which say that you have to look at consideration, and if you're an at-will employee, at-will employment is not consideration for an arbitration clause.
And I absolutely agree, and Easter Seals makes no contention that at-will employment is consideration for this arbitration agreement, or because this is an antecedent agreement with respect to the delegation provision, as far as We don't contend that at-will employment is consideration as well. It is a mutual agreement that the arbitrator will determine issues of arbitrability.
But if there's no consideration, then you don't apply that clause because you don't have an agreement apply.
Excuse me, Judge Sith. As far as
don't tell me why that's an incorrect statement, I invite you to.
Okay, yes. Because what you do is simply, it's an antecedent agreement. It's another agreement that it's an agreement between the parties that issues of arbitrability are going to be determined by the arbitrator.
That's
consideration. You're both agreeing to that provision. And the Supreme Court and this court has held that delegation provision is an agreement in and of itself.
Our cases, prior cases, have said that where there's no consideration, there's no contract. So, case cited in the briefs points out that otherwise you could just walk into court and say, I have an agreement with this person, and you'd have to go to an arbitrator when they had no relationship. You have to prove there's something there first.
Right. And in this agreement, I think it's undisputable that there is consideration. But as far as with respect to a delegation clause, I think what this court's responsibility is to do is simply look at the delegation provision to determine if it is delegable.
And what is the consideration for the delegation provision?
The mutual agreement to defer all issues to the arbitrator.
The Court of Appeals found that was illusory because the practical effect of it was that everything that was of interest to the employee went there, but there was an exception for everything that was of interest or the primary purpose for the employer. Can you address that?
The Court of Appeals decision was absolutely incorrect because they were looking at the agreement as a whole, and it is black letter law with respect to arbitration agreements that you don't look at the arbitration agreement at whole. Mr. Soares did not challenge the language at all with respect to what is being delegated. What he is making contentions with respect to mutuality of obligation, unconscionability, that Ms. Twine is not a party to this. But what the Supreme Court in your court says, you've got to look at that, and then if there is an antecedent agreement, then it is deferred to the arbitrator to determine the issues of formation.
And one thing I wanted you to have a chance to address is the cases that talk about delegation clauses are not employment at will cases. And so there was other consideration. So then you looked at mutuality of obligation and the language. Here you're saying the mutuality of obligation is the consideration. There, so you have to look at, there's no consideration for, the opposing counsel argues, for the contract as a whole, for the delegation clause, for anything, unlike in cases like Eaton or Hewitt or some of the others where there was other consideration.
Right. And an employment at will, and we have never made the contention that employment at will is consideration. If this court chooses to look at whether or in fact wants to make sure that there is consideration.
I'm not being clear, I can tell, and I understand that the argument that you made. But if there's no consideration for the contract at all, then how can you look separately? Is there consideration for the delegation clause? Because you said there's no consideration, period. So, of course, there's none for any of it. I'm not sure how to apply that, and perhaps I'm missing something in the argument, and I wanted to hear your explanation of that.
What this court does or should do as far as even in cases in employment at will, such as the Rent-A-Center versus Jackson case, you look at the delegation clause to see if there is an agreement, if there is a clear and unmistakable delegation by the parties to the arbitrator to determine issues of arbitrability. That is an agreement in and of itself. And I think the jurisprudence says that you pluck that antecedent agreement to determine whether there is an agreement to delegate to the arbitrator. With respect to if Mr. Cletus's argument goes to the contract as a whole, the arbitration agreement as a whole. Nowhere has Mr. Soares contended that the delegation provisions, either the delegation provision within the body of the arbitration agreement or the arbitration agreement that is incorporated by adoption of the AAA rules, is unclear. It is absolutely clear, and this court in Pinkerton said it was absolutely clear, and the United States Supreme Court in Rent-A-Center said it was absolutely clear. In Leisner and Ford Motor Company have held that those delegations are clear.
In going back to the consideration issue, do we look at, but there's consideration present, do we look at the adequacy or sufficiency of the consideration?
No, you do not. As far as long as there is as long as consideration is present, because then this court has long said that you don't get into the weighing of what is sufficiency of consideration. You simply see whether there's consideration or not. In this case, we have a very strong argument that consideration is equal on the part of both parties. If you want to look at the contract as a whole, because Easter Seals agrees to arbitrate all claims it has against Mr. Soares, as well as Mr. Soares agreeing to arbitrate all claims against Easter Seals. There's also absolute mutuality. There is a carve-out for injunctive relief. And that carve-out is important, and I think some of the courts, and I think that the Missouri Court of Appeals got it wrong. As far as with respect to the injunctive relief, it is important that both parties have that ability for injunctive relief, because Mr. Soares could have issues of privacy, issues of defamation. For instance, with respect to continued publicity, with his the accusations of him being abusive to Easter Seals clients.
Counselor, you're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
May it please the court. I disagree with, obviously, my counterpart here on a lot of the issues. I do think that the Court of Appeals got it right. There is no consideration for either the delegation clause or the arbitration agreement.
What about the mutual agreement? This is not a unilateral contract, is it?
No, this is a bilateral contract. Are you talking about the delegation provision itself?
I'm talking about both.
Well, the delegation...
Both, there's agreement both ways in this case. Why isn't the mutual agreement, the bilateral agreement to arbitrate consideration?
The practical effect of the agreement, the carve-outs that Mr. Rice discussed, the practical effect per Green and per Jimenez is that the employers reserved everything that it could ever want to bring in court for itself, whereas anything that my client, Mr.
Soares,
would
bring...
Isn't
that really code for a sufficiency of consideration argument as opposed to consideration?
I would disagree with that, especially under Green, Brewer, and Jimenez. I think that when they haven't promised anything with regard to the delegation provision or the arbitration agreement as a whole, there is no consideration under Missouri state law.
Well, what about this provision, the argument that if you pluck out the delegation provision or the delegation agreement and just look at the consideration for that agreement, and then you do have a mutual promise, don't you, that both sides agree to let the arbitrator decide formation issues?
Well, your first point, I would disagree. I think that Granite Rock, I think the Court of Appeals got it right, that Granite Rock does allow you to challenge the existence of a delegation clause through the arbitration agreement as a whole. Although I'm not conceding that's what I did. For your second point, I believe that there is no mutuality of obligation with regard to the delegation clause because of the carve-out. They haven't actually agreed to delegate anything to the arbitrator, whereas my client has apparently agreed to delegate everything. So that's not mutuality of obligation because, you know, if there's this injunctive relief, there may not even be an opportunity to bring a motion to compel arbitration, whereas this delegation clause says that any claims should be decided by the arbitrator. And so I believe that the practical effect, again, is that there's no mutuality of obligation.
Can you address, you said there were some prior cases that found that such promises were illusory, Jimenez, I think you cited.
Well, Green, Jimenez, and Brewer, they all use language which discussed the practical effect of a mutual obligations. And in Green, I believe it was an auto lender, reserved the right to bring its most likely claims or self-help repossession for itself without going to an arbitrator and without addressing anything through an arbitrator. And so the court found that was illusory. Brewer uses the same language, and so I don't mess it up. I'm going to check my notes. But this was a title company, and the practical effect was to bind the consumer to arbitration, whereas they reserved everything that they might have practically had against the consumer for themselves for court.
Opposing counsel said you might want to seek injunctive relief also, and this permits you to do that.
I found that the lower courts found as well that these go beyond even what I'd call a law school hypothetical. Remember when everybody at the end of class would raise their hand and ask the professor just crazy out there questions? Those aren't any kind of claims that my client would ever have. And I've been doing this for a long time in strictly employment law on both the defense and the plaintiff side. And those aren't claims that my client's ever going to have. It's not realistic. It's not even within the realm. And so that's my position on that, ma'am.
Does this court's prior opinions regarding at-will employment not being considered consideration, is that still the minority view? When you compare to others, there are other states who consider either continued employment or initial employment valid consideration for an arbitration clause.
I sincerely can't speak to the other states, Your Honor. I just know that Missouri's has several precedents which say that at-will employment is not consideration. And I can tell you as a practitioner, I would agree, because I see people get fired for anything or nothing all the time. You know, the employer's not actually promising to do anything, but I can't speak to other states.
Would your client in this case been able to work for Easter Seals if he hadn't agreed to the arbitration clause?
I don't believe so. I think that they've stated such, but I don't have any independent evidence of that one way or another.
Was there evidence in the record that he was told he couldn't work for
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I believe it's in the arbitration agreement itself. And, you know, it's a condition of the employment in the contract as a whole.
Didn't the contract, I'm hoping I have the right contract, didn't it have an opt-out provision?
Not that
not
I'm aware.
Not in this contract. So
not that I'm
different
aware.
Different case.
So I guess getting back to the consideration, there isn't any, and the lower courts both found that there's no consideration, and those are, I believe, the facts that we have for the record. And so I don't have a whole lot more to say. I know that the Court of Appeals didn't get to the unconscionability argument, but should this court get to the unconscionability argument, I believe that the delegation clause is also unconscionable because there's no consideration. And so I would think that the formation thing would come first, but if the court got there's no consideration, and that's not really, in my view, a
Well, that would preclude
agreement.
There being a contract, so you wouldn't get to conscionability or unconscionability.
I agree. And that's why I figured the court would address that issue first. And that's my focus. Unless there are any more questions, Your Honors, I thank you for your time.
Your Honors, I stated this in my application for transfer, and I'll state it again. If this arbitration agreement that Easter Seals has cannot stand. There is not an employment arbitration agreement that can stand. There is absolute consideration. It's divided down the middle with respect to mutuality. As far as there's a mutuality of obligation on the part of Easter Seals, there's a mutuality of obligation on the part of SOARS to arbitrate all claims.
Tell me why you have that carve out, because that certainly is one thing that might be not in the agreement.
Because if there is, what if we would be disclosing HIPAA records of Mr. SOARS? What if Mr. SOARS took medical records from one of Easter Seals' clients with mental disabilities and disperse those. Trying to get those back and trying to get Mr. SOARS to comply.
So you're saying that injunctive relief is solely limited to disclosure of confidential information?
No, I'm saying injunctive relief with respect to defamation. If there is defamation on the part and continued defamation, that injunctive relief and damages cannot resolve the issue, and an injunctive relief is imperative in order for one party to stop the behavior. I think that it is important for the party to have that ability for injunctive relief. I really do, because once the cat's out of the bag, people can be really harmed, which damages can't compensate that individual. Judges, as far as with respect to all aspects of this agreement, it is totally mutual. It is on the part of both. It's not only with the delegation provision, but it's also with respect.
Have you ever had an employee bring a claim for injunctive relief against Easter Seals?
I am not aware of any, but the possibility is real as far as in that. As far as we have to make those available, and Easter Seals made sure that Mr. SOARS had that ability available, as well as Easter Seals itself, because it has crucial, vital medical and financial information of these clients who can't necessarily take care of themselves. With respect to these instructors, take care of the financial aspects of the client. And if there is access to a bank account, if there is others, we've got Easter Seals has to have the ability to get injunctive relief for one of its employees to stop. Because there is, unlike many other situations, it is really important. Our employees have a fiduciary duty with respect to its clients, because they need the help, and that's why they're coming to Easter Seals for help.
Thank you, client. You're out of time. Thank you, Counselor. You're out of time.